When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
3, 2, 1.
When I'm working out, I love to listen to your podcast.
Whenever you say something, other people react to it.
Taking my breath away, Aaron.
Vern Lundquist joins me. Hall of Famer Jim Calhoun, NASCAR icon Dale Earnhardt Jr. Kirk Herbstreit is on the phone.
Here we go.
Welcome in, everybody, episode 257 of the podcast. It is Swimming America, the Air Tour Sports Podcast. It is Thursday, May 28th, 2020. And I'll be honest, people, I really did wonder. When I decided to push the first episode of the week back to Tuesday, obviously Monday was Memorial Day. I hope everybody had a great holiday weekend. I was worried. I said, am I going to have enough content over the course of 2 days to get you a fresh show on Thursday? And instead, it's the exact opposite. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to open up very similarly to how I did last episode. I'm just going to talk about where we are with the return of the major sports in this COVID-19 era. Again, to be abundantly clear, I don't claim to be an NBA expert or a Major League Baseball expert or an NFL expert, but I do think it's important. You guys are first and foremost sports fans. You might like college football more than the NFL. You might like college basketball more than the NBA, but as this country as a whole comes back to normal, I think the last frontier is we want our sports back. And I think it's time that, again, as I said last episode, we don't have to rush anybody back if it's not safe, but I think it's becoming increasingly clear that these sports can be played in a safe environment. And I think both the NBA and Major League Baseball are missing a golden opportunity here. Won't spend a ton of time about it off the top, but do want to just kind of keep you abreast on that. Then we will switch to the college sports scene, because I do think there's some really interesting news here. One piece of information that I want to share: Johnny Juzang, the former Kentucky Wildcat, got eligible at UCLA. I think that is a huge sign for players to get eligible throughout college sports here over the next couple months. As we get set for the 2020-21 season, I believe a lot of people that need waivers will get them because of this COVID-19 pandemic. That obviously includes some very high-profile players. Mack McClung, who committed to Texas Tech on Wednesday. Olivier Saar, who's committed to Kentucky. There's a lot of people that are going to be pushing for these waivers. The fact that Johnny Juzang got one on Wednesday is a great sign. We will wrap with a little bit of recruiting news. Musa Cisse, a top 10 prospect in the class of 2021, is moving up to 2020. Jonathan Kuminga released his top 5 last week. I'll just give you a quick thought on that because I missed it last episode. And finally, the Arizona Wildcats going international. I actually think I have a little bit of a nugget that you guys will appreciate and like, and I will talk a little bit about their recruiting classes. They got a guy on Wednesday that I think their staff believes is a potential lottery pick type talent, McDonald's All-American type talent from overseas. So just going to touch on that a little bit. We're not going to spend a ton of time talking recruiting, but I do want to just keep you abreast as things happen in the college sports world. And before we get started, I want to remind everybody, please make sure that you're subscribed to the Aaron. I'm sorry. I forgot to mention, on top of all that, how about this? Nate Oates, the head coach of the University of Alabama. How did I forget Nate Oates? Nate Oates, University of Alabama, awesome young coach. Alabama did not have a great first season under Nate Oates, but he is, I believe, one of the young, dynamic head coaches in all of college basketball. And we talk about a lot of different things as he is trying to build up the Alabama program. So Nate Oates, another great guest on the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast, head coach of the Alabama Crimson Tide, will join the show momentarily. Now, where was I? Oh, yeah, that's right. Before I get started, please make sure you're subscribed to the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast. You can do it on iTunes. You can do it on the Podcast Addict app. If you have an Android, Podcast Addict is the way to go. Podbean, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, wherever you listen to podcasts, make sure you're subscribed to the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast. Also, make sure to rate and review the show. Give us a quick 5 stars. Let us know what you like. Let us know what you don't like. Be like Dylan As I told you last week, Dylan came in with a great review the other day saying that great podcast, Aaron. The podcast keeps everyone well informed on the basketball landscape and is very entertaining. Clutch for any college basketball fan or student of the game learning from the Hall of Fame coaches. So as Dylan has mentioned, Gary Williams came on last week, Jim Calhoun, a lot of great guests in previous weeks. So thank you to Dylan for that. Also, if you're not following on Instagram, Aaron_Torres_sports_podcast on Instagram. As I mentioned last episode, I do have a Facebook page, Aaron Torres Writer. I'm on YouTube. You can find me pretty much anywhere, people, at this point. But that is the important part. Find me on all the platforms. Obviously, Twitter as well, at Aaron_Torres. And finally, I would say, before I get into today's show, what I have been saying. So many of you, I'm thrilled that a lot of you are getting back to some semblance of normalcy. I've seen a lot of you have messaged me privately saying, dude, you know, I'm finally back to a normal routine. I'm finally back to commuting to work, going to the gym. And so if you are in a normal routine, and obviously I'm thinking about all of you, I hope all of you get back to normalcy soon. But if you're getting back to a routine, as I've said, go back and download the old episodes. I've said it a bunch, and I'm going to keep saying it. A lot of great guests during this quarantine. Rick Barnes, head coach at Tennessee. Mark Pope, head coach at BYU. Obi Toppin, National Player of the Year. Emmanuel Quickley, SEC Player of the Year. Mason Jones from Arkansas. Eric Musselman, the Arkansas head coach. So go back and listen to all those interviews. I really did try to make them evergreen so that if you miss them in real time, they would still be good and interesting to listen to. So go back and listen to old episodes. If you miss them during the quarantine, I encourage you to go back and download those. The interviews are really fun. Again, I think you'll enjoy learning from Obi Toppin and Rick Barnes and all the guys and girls that I have had on this show. All right, let's get into it, people. No more time to waste. And listen, I do want to start where I have the last couple episodes, which is kind of just the state of sports in this COVID-19 era. And for the 100th time, for the final time, I understand this is not an NBA podcast. I understand this is not a Major League Baseball, NFL podcast. And I understand that many of you, maybe you prefer college football to the NFL. Maybe you prefer college basketball to the NBA. But at the end of the day, you wouldn't listen to this show if you were not a sports fan. And I think all of us, as we start to get back to normalcy in this life, the last missing piece is in fact live sports. Now, on a positive note, we have gotten live sports in some capacities. NASCAR is back, UFC is back, the Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady golf event was back. And I think what we need now, what we all want now, is to get back to big sports, right? To get back the NBA, to get back Major League Baseball. And even though this isn't a baseball podcast, I know that a lot of you love the Reds. I know a lot of you love the Braves. You love the Los Angeles Dodgers, the New York Yankees, the Boston Red Sox. And even if you're not a diehard, even if you listen to this show for college hoops, I think we all agree, you want to see LeBron. You want to see Kawhi. You want to see the Yankees. You want to see the Red Sox. And so I just want to give you a quick update where everything is right now. First of all, on the college spectrum, great week for the college sports scene as the Pac-12 has announced that June 15th, they can start bringing athletes back to campus. I reported actually early Wednesday, Michigan State will be able to bring back athletes to campus June 15th. So the ball is getting rolling in a positive direction with college football and college athletics in general. I truly believe that most athletes will be on campus no later than July 1st. And I think football is going to go off mostly without a hitch. I said it last week. We don't know about fans. We don't know what percentage. But in terms of games themselves, they will get played. Unfortunately, the professional sports scene, that is a little bit more up in the air. And I got to be honest, I'm a little disappointed in both the NBA and Major League Baseball because I believe that both have an opportunity right now to capture the sports scene as many people are still at home. Many people are working from home. Some of you, unfortunately, many people across the country are either out of work or have reduced work. And this is the time that sports should want to come back. This is the time that sports should be clamoring to get back on our TVs, recapture America, give America a distraction. And again, unfortunately, the NBA and Major League Baseball are both blowing it for completely different reasons. So let's start with the NBA. And I'm not going to spend too much time on it because I did talk about it a lot last week, or last episode, excuse me. But if you did listen to that episode, What I said was this, is that over the weekend, we got this great piece of news that the NBA has engaged with Disney World in Florida, Disney's Wide World of Sports, in terms of getting games at Disney. For people who don't know the layout, the Wide World of Sports is separate from the Disney Park. There's basketball gyms there. There's three or four. Obviously, they play that college tournament there in November. And there are facilities to use, there are hotels to use, and all of a sudden, you can create the bubble that the NBA has wanted to create around its players. It all sounded good on Saturday when the report came out. But as I told you, I said, if you actually read the fine print, because the fine print says that if you actually read the ESPN report, even though they're inching towards this proposal, it could still be 7-8 weeks until the actual season gets started again. And I said on Tuesday's show, and I don't want to repeat myself too much here, but I said, what is the NBA doing? We don't want to rush players back if it's not healthy. We want to give them time to get their bodies reacclimated to things. But most facilities have been open for a while now. Almost every NBA facility has been open. There is no reason that players cannot be somewhere training, whether it is in Disney, whether it is in their home facility. There is no reason players cannot be training June 1st and have games on July 1st. Instead, it comes out on Wednesday that it's basically confirmed exactly what I said, is that Shams Charania, the very prominent NBA writer for Stadium, he used to work for Yahoo, Shams tweeted out this about where we are at with the return of the NBA. He said the NBA is working on a multi-phase medical safety protocols towards the restart of play. Current projections have in-market training camps in July, then camps and scrimmages in Orlando, then resume play in late July, early August. NBA, what are you doing? I wanted to yell and scream right there, but listen, I know a lot of you are in the car, I know a lot of you are with your kids, and it's like, NBA, what are you doing? And again, I spent so much time on it, not going to spend a ton of time here, last time I say that, promise. But think about the NBA and the situation they were in. If the NBA moved this thing along, if they got things rolling, by July 1st, by June 1st, you could be at training camp. By July 1st, you could have games going. And you essentially have that whole window from the beginning of July until the middle of August to really get this thing rolling, to really get people excited about the NBA. And then hopefully, you're in the middle of the playoffs by the time the NFL starts and you can steal a little bit of the spotlight from the NFL. That's in a perfect world. That's if you start July 1st. Unfortunately, the NBA has decided to do the exact opposite. They've dragged their feet. There's been a million phone calls. There's been a million text chains with players. And Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, I've been more critical of this guy than anybody else because I still don't know what this guy has done as commissioner. The league has never, players change teams left and right. There was complete competitive imbalance for 4 or 5 years with the Warriors. And now he has one decision to make. He makes the right decision to shut down the league on March 10th. I'm going to give him credit for that. But at the same time, it's time to get this thing going. And all we hear is there's going to be another call, and there's going to be this, and there's going to be that. And there was actually a report on Wednesday that Adam Silver is going to hold another call with the big stakeholders in the NBA on Friday, but even then, they might not get an official proposal on when they're going to start. And I just believe that the NBA has made a colossal mistake in dragging their feet and waiting to get this thing going, because you know what's going to happen? They're going to get going end of July, beginning of August, and by all accounts, they plan on playing regular season games, which, oh, by the way, is another issue, because you already have star players saying, if I can't make the playoffs, I'm not going to play. Damian Lillard came out and said that on Tuesday, but you're going to start the regular season up again late July, early August, and then you're going to start the playoffs in the middle of August, which, guess what? That is when the NFL takes off. That is when we start getting 3, 4, 5 days of preseason games. We get preseason games from Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And I believe the NBA is in for a rude awakening. I believe they're in for a rude awakening on two counts. One, they're in for a rude awakening in the sense that they are going to realize that they just dragged their feet too long. And then they're in for a rude awakening because they're going to realize that the NBA is going to smash them. And it is, or the NFL is going to smash them. And it's so funny because you hear these people on social media and on TV, and, you know, people say that I have hot takes, but I always think that what I do is I may have an unpopular opinion, but what I try to do is present facts to back it up. And so what a real hot take is just saying something because it sounds right, but having no actual factual data. And I bring that up because I've seen so many people on TV, oh, well, you know, the NBA, they're inching closer towards taking down the NFL. And the NBA, you better be careful. It might be more popular than the NFL in our lifetime. Really? Really? Well, we're about to find out right now. Because there is no piece of factual data that says the NBA is ready to take on the NFL. And just for fun, I looked it up. First of all, of the top 50 TV shows in the history of television, 49 of them are NFL games. The only one that wasn't, MASH, series finale, 105 million people. Shout out to MASH. Every other show of the top 50 shows in TV history was an NFL game, mostly all Super Bowls. So let's stop. But even beyond that, I went to look it up. You know what the most popular TV show, just a TV show, the last 8 years? Sunday Night NFL Football. Sunday Night NFL Football last year, 2019, averaged 18 million viewers, 18.8 million viewers per show, per week, Sunday Night Football. You know what the NBA Finals averaged? And this is the finals. The NBA Finals averaged 15 million viewers per game. 18 million in Game 6, the clinching one that the Raptors won. So a Sunday Night Football game, performance, moment, that is bigger on the American sports landscape than the NBA Finals. An Eagles-Cowboys game on Sunday does similar ratings to the clinching game of the NBA Finals. And so I just think that the NBA just completely whiffed on this, where they are now going to be going head-to-head in the playoffs against football on Thursday Night Football, Saturday College Football, Sunday Night Football, and Monday Night Football. And if we're being perfectly honest with the NBA, I said this on the last episode, we don't really watch the NBA playoffs until it gets to like the Western Conference Finals, the Eastern Conference Finals. Now, we might watch a specific team. The Warriors did incredible ratings when they had Kevin Durant. LeBron is always going to do great ratings. But that Heat, the Heat-Pacers first round series, the Jazz versus the Thunder, like nobody's watching that. And you're certainly not watching that if you have an option like a Sunday night or Monday night football game. And so I just think that the NBA has completely whiffed on this. We will see. We will find out soon if they're actually going to come back in July. I will give them credit. At least it feels like they actually have a plan in place and a date in mind, even if I think it's the completely wrong date. But I just think they're in for a rude awakening when they have to go up head-to-head with the NFL. I think until you get to the finals, I just don't see there being a lot of interest in this NBA season when it is having to go head-to-head with when it's having to go head-to-head with the NFL. So yeah, that's the NBA. And what I would say is, like I said a minute ago, at least the NBA has a plan to get back in place. And as bad as the NBA is, I think you can actually make a case that Major League Baseball is worse. And this isn't a baseball podcast, and I'm not going to spend a ton of time on it. But the MLB players look totally idiotic right now. And so here's the difference between the NBA and Major League Baseball. NBA got a plan. Personally, AT doesn't like the plan. I think most logical people would agree that it's probably not the best plan. They probably should have gotten it moving. Major League Baseball, I swear, the players, the owners, everybody is stuck in like 1942 and thinks that the entire world is waiting for them to return. And what I mean by that is very simply this. I'm going to explain what's going on in baseball, what makes it so different than the NBA. Major League Baseball, first of all, as you know, their season didn't actually start, right? So it was supposed to start April 1st, right around there. Pandemic hits mid-March. Season at the time is postponed. At that time, Major League Baseball players and the owners agreed on prorated salaries. What that means very simply is this, and this is all going to be a long-winded way of me getting to why baseball is screwing up. But basically, what the Major League players and the owners agreed upon is, when we come back, however many games you guys play, you will get credit for those games. So we're not going to pay you for 162 games. But if you play 100, we'll pay you for 100. You play 80, we'll pay you for 80, on and on and on and on and on. And it's actually going to be a little bit more, because once the postseason revenue comes in, all that stuff, we're good to go. That was the plan. Players, owners agreed to that. that was also under the idea that fans were going to be in the stands. So we're going to play 80 games, but at least fans will be in the stands. Well, obviously, since then, we've come to the realization fans are not going to be in the stands, at least to start the season, and realistically, there probably won't be any fans in the stands throughout the whole season. And so now, the owners have gone back to the players and said, look, I know we promised you prorated contracts. If you play 82 games, you get $82 worth of salary. But, and this is again a fact, 40% of all the money that comes into baseball happens at the ballpark, happens from fans. It's ticket sales, it's concessions, it's parking. And so since then, the owners have said, look, we get that you guys took a pay cut, but we need you to take another pay cut because the 40% of revenue that we thought was going to come in isn't going to come in. And the players refuse to do it. And listen, I'm not Mr. in favor of owners. I'm not Mr. Pro owners. You know, I usually side with the millionaires versus the billionaires. But I do think in this case, the owners are right. Major League Baseball players are essentially saying, no, we agreed to prorated contracts, but we're not giving up any more money. And what came out on Tuesday was a plan for the highest paid players to give up the most money and then kind of a sliding scale from there. So Mike Trout and Clayton Kershaw and all the high paid players would give up the highest percentage of their salary, and the guys making under $1 million would give up the lowest percentage of their salary. The players have essentially said, no, that is not going to work. And the players are basically saying, look, owners are trying to turn fans on the star players. And that's not fair. And that's what the players are saying. But in this case, I actually agree with the owners. And it's very simply this. Major League Baseball players are essentially saying, we are not willing to give up any more salary. And I just think that in this climate, that is a terrible stance to have. And I understand that in most cases, you say, well, why are the owners the only one? Why do the players have to give up money but not the owners? The owners aren't making any money. The owners aren't making any money because there's no games and 40% of the revenue comes from fans in the stands, and the money they make off TV is going to go to actually paying players. And it is still a business at the end of the day, and players are still employees at the end of the day. And the thing that bothers me with the Major League Baseball stuff and the players specifically is that the players are tone deaf to the moment in time where they are right now. It goes without saying, so many of you listening, there's stuff going on financially. We all get it. There are close to 40 million people who are unemployed in the United States right now. Even more so, outside of those 40 million people, just about everybody else has taken a pay cut in some capacity. The biggest organizations, executives are taking a pay cut. I saw it ESPN. I don't work there. This is a report. It's not me sharing inside information. It's facts. The highest paid people at ESPN have taken salary reductions to allow the lower paid people, the guys behind the scenes and girls behind the scenes, to keep making money to allow them to keep their job. Shout out to Stephen A. Smith. Shout out to Scott Van Pelt. They are taking less money to help the lower paid employees keep their job so ESPN doesn't have to fire people. That is a credit to them. And that is essentially what Major League Baseball is asking their players to do. They are asking them to take less money. The star players give up more money. The other players give up some, but not all. And I think the Major League Baseball players should take it. Now, listen, can you negotiate a little bit of a different percentage? And I get it's a negotiation, and I get that, you know, there's going to be back and forth. But I also think that we are in such a unique climate where what Major League Baseball players are being asked to do is what every employee across the country is being asked to do, okay? So, as an example, I saw that Chris Mack is taking a salary reduction at Louisville. Sean Miller is taking a salary reduction at Arizona. And I bring that up because these are high-profile people who are still doing their job every day. That's the other part, too. Major League Baseball players haven't played a game yet, and they're not willing to give up any more salary. Sean Miller, Chris Mack, Stephen A. Smith, Scott Van Pelt, they're going to work and still giving up their salary. But baseball players who aren't even playing right now can't give up any salary? Give me a break, man. Give me a break. It is a bad look for Major League Baseball, and the longer it goes, the worse it's going to be. And I understand the players and the players' union are saying, look, the owners are trying to turn the public on the fans. The owners are trying to make the players the bad guys. But in this case, the owners are right. It's not that the owners want a bigger percentage. The owners just want enough money to pay the bills. If you miss this story, how about this? The Oakland A's are not going to pay their minor leaguers for the rest of the season. It's $400 a week or $100. It's some obscenely low amount of money. And that's the other part with Major League Baseball. You have teams that have laid off employees, that have fired employees, that have let go of certain people within the organization. You have minor leaguers who are not getting paid. And you have major leaguers that aren't willing to take a pay cut. It's just a terrible look. And I get it. It's a negotiation. Maybe the percentage dips a little bit. Maybe it's this, maybe it's that. But the Major League Baseball players need to look in the mirror. They need to realize, and I'm not trying to be sports media guy, oh, they play a kid's game. And no, they deserve to make money. They deserve to make a salary. But everybody else in the country is giving up money at their respective companies. Major League Baseball players need to do the same. And I think it has been a really, really, really bad look for them over these last couple weeks. I hope it gets solved, but I'm starting to get worried that these baseball players are not budging, and I don't think it looks good at all. All right. Sorry, I make myself laugh. I got myself all fired up. It's like 95 degrees in California. I'm sweating while I'm talking about this. And apparently I just turned into Buster Olney because I just talked baseball for like the second time in the history of the podcast. But again, I think most of you are fans of these sports. Most of you, even if you're not a diehard, you want to come home after work or you're stuck at home and you want to flip on a game and have a beer and chill. And I'm sorry, I don't feel bad that Mike Trout might have to play for $8 million a year instead of $40 million a year. I don't feel bad that a guy that's making $2 million is going to make $800K. Like, I just don't feel bad. But enough baseball talk with Torres for the day. I do want to hit on some college basketball kind of news and notes, college athletics news and notes, because there was a lot of really interesting stuff that happened this week. And I think the biggest thing, the biggest piece that came out over the last couple days was weirdly, how about your boy Johnny Juzang? And when I say Johnny Juzang, you're like, Johnny, what? The guy that averaged 4 points a game at Kentucky? Yes, Johnny Juzang to me is the biggest piece of news that has come out of college sports over the last couple days for one very simple reason. As I just mentioned, when we last talked Johnny Juzang, he had announced that he was leaving Kentucky and he would be transferring to UCLA. And I remember saying at the time, I said, look, I think he's going to have trouble getting a transfer waiver because when he left the University of Kentucky, John Calipari openly said, we would love to have Johnny back. He was a great player in this program, somebody that we loved coaching. He is welcome back here anytime. And so traditionally, when a player gets a waiver, it is because they're either moving closer to home because of a sick family member, illness, whatever, or because the school basically didn't want to honor their scholarship. And you could tell with the Kentucky situation, the latter certainly wasn't the case. And so I was wrong on Johnny Juzang, but I can tell you definitively, I know at least one Pac-12 school that stopped recruiting Johnny Juzang because they did not think that he could get a waiver to play next season. So why do I bring up Johnny Juzang on May 28th out of nowhere? It's because Johnny Juzang got a waiver to play right away at UCLA next season. Forget waiting until September. Forget waiting until October. Forget the NCAA, kind of dancing on their feet and scratching their head and saying, oh, I don't know. You know, we're going to. No. May 27th, they said Johnny Juzang can be eligible next year. And so, first of all, it's really good for UCLA. I think they're already the Pac-12 favorites, and I think they're going to be even better with Johnny Juzang, obviously. But it's even better for you know who? Pretty much every team that is taking a transfer this offseason that is trying to get him eligible that is not immediately eligible. And so who could I use an example of? Oh, I don't know. Olivier Saar, the Wake Forest transfer at Kentucky. Mack McClung, who just committed to Texas Tech, who we'll talk about in a minute. DJ Carton, who committed to Marquette, who was at Ohio State. This is a great piece of news for those guys. Because if Johnny Juzang got a transfer waiver, I think a lot of guys are going to get it. Now, I don't think the approval rate is going to be 100%, but I think it's going to be even higher than it's been because I think that pretty much anything is going to fly as a logical reason in this COVID-19 era to get immediate eligibility. And so I don't know this for sure, But I'm pretty sure that Johnny Juzang's argument to the NCAA was very simply like, look, I'm from California. I went to Kentucky. I loved it there. Coach Cal was great. My teammates were great. But crap, man. Like when this situation with COVID-19 went down, I came home and I was scared to go back to Kentucky. I'm not saying that's true. I'm not saying that Kentucky isn't safe and, you know, the Kentucky staff is doing everything they can to protect their players. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is this was Johnny Juzang's excuse. Was like, I mean, I don't want to be traveling across country 6-7 times a year, going to see family, coming back, plus all the travel that I'm going to be going on during the regular season. That's scary to me. I'm afraid. I wanted to be home. I wanted to be safe. I wanted to be close. I didn't want to have to travel back and forth across the country. I believe that was Johnny Juzang's excuse to get a transfer waiver. And if that's going to fly, I think just about everything else that is a COVID-related excuse is going to fly. So I'll give you an example. I mentioned Olivier Saar, and I said this when Olivier Saar committed. I don't think Olivier Saar would have left Wake Forest if he did not believe that he could get eligible immediately. Why do I say that? Because he doesn't want to sit out. He's already said that. He said, listen, if I got to sit out, I'm just going to go overseas. If I got to sit out, I ain't sitting out and then coming back to play in 2021, 2022. Olivier Saar has already said that. So I don't believe that he would have transferred if he did not believe that he had a legitimate argument to get eligible right away. Now, I think his argument's a little bit different than Johnny Juzang, but I think it's COVID-related, right? I think his excuse makes sense. I think his logic is very simply going to be this. Listen, I was planning on coming back to Wake Forest. I love being there. I love my coach, Danny Manning. But Danny Manning got fired in the beginning of May. By the time he got fired, the NBA draft deadline was basically here. I didn't have time to collect information to decide whether I should declare or not, and I was stuck at Wake Forest. The new coach came in. I didn't really have time to meet with him because, again, we were in the middle of a pandemic, and I don't really know, and what's the deal, this and that, and how could I make a decision? There was so much going on. I was scared. I was nervous because of this pandemic. Give me eligibility. And I'm not saying with 100%, one thing, to be abundantly clear, I am not saying with 100% certainty that Olivier Saar is going to get eligible at Kentucky. What I am saying, he's got a hell of an argument for the case to be made that he should be immediately eligible. And that argument, again, is like, look, I wanted to come back to Wake Forest, but they made a coaching change in May. I couldn't meet with my new coach. Oh, by the way, the new coach encouraged me. He said it's okay to transfer. He said he will support my cause. And so I think it's a great sign for Olivier Saar. I think it's a great sign for anybody else who's trying to transfer. I'll give you another example. On Tuesday, how about this? On Tuesday, St. John's leading scorer in the middle, end of May, beginning of June, announced that he's going to transfer. First of all, shout out to Mike Anderson. That freaking sucks. But I think this kid, who is not eligible next year, I think he has a built-in excuse of like, look, I'm in New York. I'm scared. I wanted to get away. I wanted to go somewhere that wasn't the epicenter of this illness. And I'm not saying it's fair, and I'm not saying it's right, and I'm not promising that the guy is going to get his approval. What I am just simply saying is, again, that I truly believe that this is an example of what this waiver process is going to look like. And so I will be very curious to see if the waiver approvals start coming fast and furious, because I think of everyone that's seeking a waiver approval, I don't know that Johnny Juzang had the strongest case. Now, I don't know what the exact argument was, and I don't know what lawyers got involved, and I don't know what happened, but I don't believe that Johnny Juzang was the guy with the strongest case to get immediate eligibility. And so if Johnny Juzang got immediate eligibility, keep an eye out. I think this is great news. I think it's great news for any player that wants to get eligible. I don't think it will be 100% approval, but I do think it will be a higher percentage than it's ever been. Keep in mind also that the NCAA probably next season will remove the one-time, they'll put the one-time transfer rule into place, which basically means you could transfer without sitting out. I don't think they want a lot of bureaucracy and legal headaches this offseason. I think more of them get approved than ever before. I think the Johnny Juzang news was great for college basketball fans. I do just want to wrap up on a couple other quick notes from across college basketball. The first one being Mac McClung, high-profile player from Georgetown. He averaged 16 a game, Georgetown's leading scorer. He's obviously well-known for the dunks and all that stuff. He has committed to Texas Tech. And I'm not going to spend a ton of time on it, but obviously I talked about Texas Tech last episode, how they lost their starting point guard, three-year starter, Davide Moretti, decided to go back to Italy, and even then there was talk that Mac McClung very much would be in play at Texas Tech and that he could potentially replace Davide Moretti. Now, I will say this. Mac McClung is a talented kid. I don't know that he's what Texas Tech needs. And I'm just going to do a quick little Texas Tech thing because I believe that they're a Big 12 title contender. I believe they're a national title contender. But if you're asking me, would I rather have senior Davide Moretti or junior Mac McClung? Again, assuming Mac McClung can get eligible, I'd rather have senior Davide Moretti. Because the one thing that he did, he ran the offense. He wasn't a pure point guard. He played off the ball sometimes, but he was that steadying force as an older player, as a senior. And as I said in the last episode, Texas Tech's talent is through the roof. They have a kid named TJ Shannon, who's a sophomore, who I believe is a future NBA player. A guard named Kevin McCullough. They have a kid named Joel Ntambwe sitting out last season who will be eligible this year. He is the brother of Jonathan Kuminga, the number one high school player in the class of 2021. And I'll talk about Kuminga in a minute. And they have talent, but the one thing they don't have is a point guard, a guy that gets all those other guys set up. And I don't really know that Mac McClung solves it. Now, they will have a lot of pieces. They will have a lot of nice players on that roster. But Chris Beard is a guy that traditionally takes rosters that are unconventional or they come together late or he's still piecing it together in April, May, June, July, and he turns it into a contender by the end of the season. 2 years ago, it led to a national championship game appearance. Last year, it did not work out well. And all I'll say about Mac McClung, I think he's a talented player, but he's not a great defender. He's not a great shooter. He's not a great ball handler. And so I'm not really sure how he fits in with Texas Tech. It feels like a bigger headline than his actual production will include. All right, real quick, a couple other notes. I just mentioned Jonathan Kuminga. Listen, you guys have heard about him. It happened last week. I'm not going to spend too much time on it. I just want to give you kind of what I have heard. He is the number one player in the high school class of 2021. On Friday, he narrowed his list down to five schools. Well, four schools plus the G League. Texas Tech, Auburn, Kentucky, Duke, and the G League. I'm just going to tell you what I've heard. I've heard he actually wants to play college basketball, and I've heard, first of all, he's going to reclassify, okay? So for people who don't know, the reclassification process, the reason it's being sped up this year, the reason so many kids are reclassifying, it's because very simply, SAT scores. That's the biggest reason. SAT scores have been waived. You no longer have to get a qualifying SAT score to get into college for next year because a lot of the seniors that were seniors this past season in high school had not taken the SAT yet, even in April. So the NCAA said, you don't need an SAT score to get into college. And so because of it, you're going to see more kids reclassifying. Jonathan Kuminga will be one of them. The question becomes, does he play college basketball or does he go to the G League? As I said a minute ago, I'm told he wants to play college basketball. I'm told he wants to go to Texas Tech. I'm also told that he might be a year too early. And what I mean by that is very simply this. I think he wants to go to college, play college basketball, but I think he also knows that if these name, image, likeness rules, which are set to go into place in 2021, and I've spent a ton of time talking about them, he could make some real money, play college basketball with his brother. The problem is they will not be in place for this next season. And so because of it, I think if the money is right, he will very seriously consider the G League. What I was told by somebody that I trust, if there's a pecking order right now, it is G League, Texas Tech, Auburn, in that order, subject to change, depending on what the G League offer is. Is it a good offer? Does he really want to play with his brother? But I would also tell you is that he wants to play college basketball, and if the money isn't good in the G League, you could see him at Texas Tech. One other note on 2020 reclassifications, Musa Cisse, top 10 kid in the class of 2021, announces he's going to drop down to class of 2020. He has a list of, I believe, six schools. It includes LSU. It includes Memphis, it includes Kentucky, it includes Florida State, it includes Georgetown, and I'm missing one other one. Is that right? Six? Georgia. Tom Crean, Bulldogs, Georgia. Georgia ain't getting them. What I've been told about Musa Cisse, he is coming to the class of 2020. It doesn't sound as though he is going to pursue a G League option. And I know we have a lot of Kentucky fans that listen to this show. Everything I've heard is LSU. They've been involved the longest. If you want to infer that something else could be involved, I'm not going to do it. I'm not saying that's what's happening. Obviously, anytime LSU is favored for a kid, there are going to be assumptions. I am not saying that's happening, but I believe that LSU is the favorite. I believe he could commit here. I think he even said he's going to commit in these next couple days. Finally, I just want to give you guys, this is what I do. I give you the information before it happens, okay? So, final piece of recruiting nugget, Arizona. So, Arizona, again, I just did my Will Wade speech. Again, infer what you want, imply what you want, believe what you want. I believe he'll end up at LSU. And part of the reason is, like, Will Wade's a good recruiter. Like, Will Wade is a good recruiter, but there are obviously always going to be questions that come anytime that Will Wade is involved with a kid. Obviously, there's a similar situation with Sean Miller. Now, I don't think the Sean Miller deal is fair because, as I've said many times, if you actually look at what Sean Miller has been found guilty of, it really isn't that much. But that's not why I am talking about Sean Miller today. The reason I'm talking about Sean Miller today is because over the course of this season, Sean Miller in Arizona really struggled with the American high school recruiting scene. I think they went after a lot of good players. Some of them chose other schools for logical reasons. Zaire Williams, top 10 recruit. He committed to Stanford because it's freaking Stanford. And how are you going to say no to Stanford if they want to, if they want to sign you or whatever? What Sean Miller has done, though, he is Austin Powers, international man of mystery. They have six kids committed who are from other countries. And I'll just tell you this. First of all, the kid that they got, backtrack. And by the way, I've been going on forever, so excuse me. I'm doing the best I can here. It's 150 degrees in my apartment right now. But they have six kids committed from overseas, and they got two more, a pair of brothers, on Wednesday. One of them is a Lithuanian player. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name. But the reason I'm bringing him up is because the Arizona staff is gaga over this guy, okay? Again, his name is Azulis Tabilius. I don't know how to say his name, okay? I'm sorry. But he's from Lithuania. He is believed to be Jonathan Givony, ESPN, Evan Daniels are saying he is the best international prospect that will enter college basketball this year. And I'm telling you right now, I know some people at Arizona. They think this kid is a McDonald's all. If he was American, he would be a McDonald's All-American top 20 caliber player. And so I'm only telling you this for two reasons. One, I want you to watch out for this kid. Arizona, the kids that they've brought in are real players. They got a kid from Canada named Benedict Mathurin, who they believe is a potential one-and-done type guy. Kerr Crissa, a point guard. Daniel Baccio, a power forward. These are names you'll forget in 30 seconds, but I'm only bringing it up because they believe that these guys are all top 30, top 40, top 50 caliber high school players if they were born in America. And the number one guy is the guy who committed on Wednesday, Azuris Tubelius. And I'm sorry if Azuris Tubelius is listening to this show, but I do not know how to pronounce his name. But I bring it up. They are really excited about that him. And I want to give a little credit to Sean Miller. He has figured out, he's figured out an end around. He was struggling in recruiting. Guys were saying no. Guys are worried about his future. Guys are worried about the FBI. And he just said, you know what? Let's just go international. And he got a lot of guys that can play at this level. I will be fascinated to watch Arizona. Whew. All right. Covered a lot of ground today, didn't I? I talked NBA. I talked Major League Baseball. I talked college basketball, recruiting, transfer waivers. Name another show in America that goes from, Buster Olney MLB Insider to college basketball recruiting. It doesn't exist, people. It doesn't exist. And I do hope you guys still enjoy where I'm at with the sports landscape stuff with COVID. But as I've said a bunch of times, I just want to keep you updated on what's going on because we all want our games back. And obviously, as it pertains to college basketball, I will always, always, always get you the best information I can on a lot of different stuff. And I hope you enjoyed it. And so that is all for this segment of the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast. I want to thank you guys for listening. I want to thank you guys for getting through MLB with AT, the newest segment that's sweeping America. But I also want to thank you guys for listening, as I said, for subscribing. And if you're not subscribed, now is the perfect time to do it. If you're not subscribed to the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast, you can do it on iTunes, do it on the Podcast Addict app, Podbean, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Make sure you're subscribed to the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast. Also, make sure to rate and review the show. Give us a quick 5 stars like my main man Dylan did. Let us know what you like about AT, MLB with AT, the new segment. You can write about that if you want, whatever. Also, make sure to follow on Instagram, Aaron_Torres_sports_podcast on Instagram. Follow on Facebook, the Aaron Torres writer page, YouTube. And finally, if you have any questions, AaronTorresPodcastQuestions@gmail.com. Aaron Torres, podcastquestions@gmail.com. That is all for this segment of the show. Shout out to Torrent Craig. Shout out to Rachel, who hates my voice. And now, very excited. You guys are going to love this. Nate Oates. I actually had Nate Oates on right around the start of last season. It was a short, condensed interview. This one's a little bit longer. Really think you guys will enjoy. Enjoy Nate Oates, head coach, University of Alabama. I will be back on Monday. All right, and joining me on the phone now, really excited to have this guy. I had him at the start of last college basketball season. He has completed his first year at the University of Alabama, head coach of the Crimson Tide. Nate Oates is on the phone. Coach, how you doing today?
Great. How you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing really well, Coach. I'm doing really well. And, obviously, look, it's kind of a cliche question to start off the top here, but everybody's kind of dealing with everything, unprecedented times here over the last couple months. Quickly, I was just curious, how's everything going in Tuscaloosa? I know things are different in T-Town than a lot of other places, but how are you and your family holding up over these last couple months?
I mean, obviously it's way different. I love to have my hands on our guys, getting them better. But it is what it is. I think it's good that hopefully we can get our guys back here in June to at least use some of the facilities, do some voluntary stuff. It looks like, some stuff's starting to open up. And, hopefully we're able to do some of the stuff that we normally would be able to do in the summer, being that we've got, there's going to be 8 guys playing on next year's team that haven't played for us before. So I just, for us, where we're at, I think having whatever little bit we can maybe get out of the summer to coaching our guys, I think it'll be big. But for now, we've been trying to get on Zoom calls with our guys, staying in touch, just doing what we can. But it's not a whole lot you can do right now. So just the communication aspect's been big with our guys. And then you got to try to look at positives every which way you can. I think it's been good for some of our guys to be able to spend as much time as they have at home, and maybe this will develop a hunger back. When they come back, they're ready to go. But for the staff, at least, it's good to I've been able to spend a lot more time at home. Charlie, my one assistant, him and his wife had a baby. They've actually been at the hospital. Could shoot the baby, still in the hospital. They had the baby that Wednesday before the Thursday game that got canceled. The SEC tournament. The baby's in the hospital the whole time, so it worked out well for them. He's able to work from home, from the hospital, or everywhere else. So a few positives with not being able to go into office and work, but I'm ready to get back in the gym with these guys.
Yeah, I saw you mention that with my buddy Evan Daniels, that there have been some positives to this, and I know you yourself have a couple young daughters. Has it been we know you want to be in Nashville playing in the SEC tournament, competing for an NCAA tournament bid, but given the circumstances, has it been somewhat enjoyable be home with your girls, spend more time at home? Because I saw you say that going forward it's made you reevaluate some things that you've been doing all along.
Yeah, I mean, it's been it's been great to be able to spend the time. I mean, shoot, my oldest daughter likes, you know, all the birthdays are in the spring, and my oldest daughter, Lexi, her birthday is March 20th. We never get to celebrate a birthday. It seems like we're always playing an NCAA tournament somewhere, and shoot, we're traveling, winning on her birthday, losing on her birthday, something. Like, you know, it's never. So, shoot, this year, we, you know, that first week that, right when they canceled the season, we went down to Orange Beach for a week and kind of hung out. Got to celebrate her birthday a little bit like we don't usually do. And two younger ones now. Jocelyn just turned 11 last Friday, and then Brielle turns 8 this Friday. So we got all their birthdays this spring. And able to spend a little bit more time at home with them. Even, you know, even when you're working from home and you're in the office, you can pop out of the office and hang out with them for 15 minutes between Zoom calls, between, you know, have lunch at home, obviously. When you know, working from a home office, you can always have lunch with them there. So it's been nice in that regard.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little hoop. Obviously, look, the first season did come to a conclusion in an unexpected way. Alabama 16-15, and some really good wins. You know, you beat LSU, you beat Auburn, which were two of the top three teams in the SEC. How do you kind of evaluate where you were a year ago versus where you are now? How do you look at this first year in Tuscaloosa?
Yeah, I mean, I thought the first year, you know, obviously all the injuries didn't help anything, but I thought it didn't go as well as we liked. You know, obviously the record-wise, I'm going from winning 32 games at Buffalo to just being barely above 500 here. Like, it's not quite, you know, we didn't expect to win 32 games. Obviously, it's a lot tougher league. But, you know, I think had we been able to stay a little healthier, I think we'd have won a few more games. And shoot, we could have even won some more there at the end before the season got canceled. But I do think the guys adapted well with our style of play, particularly on the offensive end. We got to get significantly better on defense. I do think, you know, a lot of the defensive stuff is – how guys are built, you know, are they long, athletic, are they tough? Can they, you know, hopefully with the 8 new guys they'll be playing next year, we've got a lot more defensive-minded team. And that way, I think the other thing on defense is you got to hold guys accountable. And when there's not very much depth and there's nobody really on the bench to put in for guys, it's hard to hold them accountable during the game. And you're just, you know, trying to convince them how important it is to guard instead of actually sitting them on the bench when they don't guard. So I think, you know, if we can avoid injuries and we've got, you know, much deeper team this year than we had last year, I think it'll be a lot easier to hold guys accountable. And I think you'll see the defense drastically improve in that regards. And I think when our defense gets better, our point total is going to go up significantly. So that's what we're focused on now. We've been looking at our defense as a staff and doing a lot of video breakdowns, doing a lot of study here while we have time to do it. You know, while we can't work our guys out to be with them, we got plenty of time to look at video and stuff as a staff.
So let me ask you actually about your style, because so something that I observed personally during the season, and I think I'm right on this, you may disagree, but for people who don't know, you guys, I don't want to say that you play like the Houston Rockets style, but, you know, a ton of three-pointers. I believe you guys led college basketball in three-point attempts per game. And I when I watched you guys this season, I said, whether it works this year or not, I think kids in recruiting are going to be really excited when they flip on film and they see Kyra Lewis, they see the guys that you had playing fast, shooting, you know, a lot of threes. You know, it seems like a fun style to play. Now, like you said, you got to clamp down defensively. You need more effort on that end. But going out on the recruiting trail this spring and in the winter, and obviously I know you didn't physically go out on the recruiting trail, but it seems as though players have been receptive. You finished with a top 20 recruiting class nationally. What do players that are looking at Alabama from the outside see? Because if I was a young player watching tape of you guys, it looks like a real fun style of play.
No, it is fun. I mean, shoot, your numbers are up. I mean, we've got slides showing, you know, Kyra's improvement from, you know, first year to second year, Petty's improvement from his first 2 years of this year. We third in the country in scoring. My last 2 years at Buffalo, we were top five in the country in scoring. So, you know, you look at the way the NBA is going, it's a lot, playing a lot faster in the NBA now, spacing the floor, taking a lot of threes. We led the country in three-pointers taken, third in scoring. You know, that's a style that recruits want to play, and I think guys are open to it. You know, we get on the phone with these Zooms, on the recruiting Zooms, and, you know, the more informed dads are excited about the way we're playing. They like watching the way we play. They like, you know, it's exciting basketball to play, to watch, you know, to coach. So, I think it will help us in recruiting. I think it already has helped us in recruiting. You know, we're looking for guys that fit our system, and the guys that fit our system are looking for a style that fits them. And I think there's a marriage that can be made there that we're trying to make as often as we can with the guys we need to win at this level.
Fantastic. What about recruiting? I mean, I mentioned you're bringing in a nice class. You've said a few times now, 8 new players. I believe everybody signed. I believe you could talk about everybody, but it seems like a nice blend of high school guys. You know, you had a junior college All-American, one of the top grad transfers that I know you guys really are excited about. I mean, tell us a little bit, and I know you've been asked about some of these guys, but some of the guys that you're bringing into the program this fall.
Yeah, so when we say 8 new guys, 3 of them were already here. They just didn't play last year. You know, 2 of them due to injuries. And James Rojas, who was first-team All-American JUCO player and kind of a tough-skilled, you know, 3/4, kind of multi-positional. And Jawan Gary's, you know, big wing, athletic, kind of same type of deal, 3/4, that, you know, real athletic, that could have used both those guys last year, but they'll both be healthy, and they're getting back recovered. You know, Jawan's a lot farther along. I'm sorry, Dan's a lot farther along than Jawan. Just the injury happened sooner, and it wasn't quite as bad of an injury, but I think James will be able to go pretty quick. And then Quinterly didn't get cleared by the NCAA, so he didn't play, but he was with us all year, and he was great in practice. I mean, our guys had a tough time guarding him. So you got those 3, and then you add in, you know, like you said, you got 3 freshmen, a JUCO kid, and a grad transfer. So the 3 freshmen, you know, we signed Keon Ambrose early, 6'8", athlete, long. We want more long athletes that can move, that can play in the perimeter. He's that. He can knock down a 3. He really rebounds the ball well, and we struggled rebounding it. You know, and then we signed, he's from Toronto, we signed another Canadian, Josh Primo. It's a 6'6", kind of point guard, combo guard that can play multiple positions, can really pass. I mean, he's, you know, some people have him projected as a first-round pick after his freshman year. I think ESPN had him at that. I mean, he, you know, we'll see if he ends up being able to go after 1 year, but whether he can or not, he's certainly talented enough to help us a lot, and he's a great kid, so we're looking forward to those 2 kids coming from Canada. And then Darius Miles is coming from the D.C. area. He's 6'7", long, athletic, skilled wing that can, you know, he can really pass the ball. I mean, he can score to the high level. He played at IMG on their post-grad team. So even though he was, you know, he's younger, he's like typical age of what a regular senior would be. So we're excited about all 3 freshmen. They fit the profile of what we want to bring. And then Keon Ellis, he's the leading scorer on the #1 JUCO team in the country, and shot over 40% from 3. He's 6'5", 2 guard that can really fill it up. So, we've had a lot of success with junior college guys at Buffalo. We're going to continue to go that route some, maybe not quite as often, but, you know, we've got Rojas in last year's class and then Keon Ellis in this year's class. So, we'll get both of them on the floor this year. And then the last one was the kid Jordan Bruner from Yale, I'm super excited about what he brings just because he's a big that fits our style, that, you know, can really help us, I think, all over the floor. You know, he can pass, dribble, and shoot at 6'9", and he's athletic, and he had a triple-double for Yale. He's got the only triple-double in Yale basketball history. He's got 1 of 3 triple-doubles, I think, you know, 4 now. Somebody corrected me. I think the kid A.J. Brodeur had a triple-double after Bruner, kid from Penn. So at the time Bruner got it, he had 1 of only 3 triple doubles in, you know, all of Ivy League basketball history. So, I mean, he's doing stuff that's, you know, not easy to do, and I think he plays the way we want to play. So I'm excited to get these new guys and get them playing our system as quick as we can here.
You know, you mentioned Javon Quinterly, and he's somebody like, so I'm old enough to remember him in high school, and he was phenomenal in high school. And for people who don't know, former McDonald's All-American, committed to Arizona, decommitted, committed to Villanova, and it just didn't work out. And I know, I think I actually spoke with you last summer, or I guess in the fall time, and you guys obviously thought that there was a pretty good element or case to be made for him to get immediate eligibility. It did not happen. But the only reason I'm bringing him up is because he was a phenomenal high school player that really people haven't seen play in, for lack of a better term, about two and a half years. You mentioned him in practice last year. It sounds like you're pretty excited to have him eligible and ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, he's really good. There's a reason he's a McDonald's All-American. Sure. And you know what? And Villanova's a great program, and I can't really speak as to why it didn't work out there. I mean, sometimes it just doesn't work. But I think, you know, Villanova plays great. Sure, they've won national championships. They take a lot of threes. They play, in some regard, they're similar to us, but they play pretty slow. They play slow, spread the floor, and take a lot of threes. We play a lot faster. I think Javon's a lot better in a system that gets up and down the floor and plays faster. So, I thought he looked great in practice all, and I think he's ready to explode. I mean, he's, like you said, people haven't seen him play for a long time, and he's ready to get back out there and play. I mean, he hasn't played for, and he's a kid that loves to play and wants to be in the gym, and I mean, he's excited. He's got an attitude that's been great. You know, he wants to lead this team. He wants us to win. I'm excited to coach him. I'm excited to get him out there. I'm excited for everybody to see him out there.
Fantastic. A couple quick questions. We'll let you go. The first one was, I just kind of wanted your overall view. We talked about year one in general from your program's perspective, but first impressions of the SEC, because, you know, I look at that league each and every offseason. It seems like great new coaches are coming in. Last year was you, Buzz Williams, Eric Musselman, obviously, you know, Rick Barnes, John Calipari, on and on and on and on. Hall of Famers, national championships, Final Fours. Just your overall evaluation of that league, because you have a lot of talented players, but you're playing against a lot of talented players each and every night.
Yeah, I mean, your first impression of the league when you're not in it is it's a really athletic, kind of gets up and down. You know, I grew up in Big Ten country, and it's Big Ten's a little bit more bruising, bigs, pounded in, and that's true about it. And the SEC has got a lot more reputation being a little more wide open, you know, athletic, and I think it is. Now, I think that, you know, like you said, the coaching's gotten pretty dang good in this league. I mean, you know, Buzz did a great job this year. Musselman did a great job this year. Shoot, Stackhouse, you know, they beat us, you know, and he, I think his talent came along at towards the end of the year, but, you know, think about the new guys, and there's a lot of, I think over half the coaches in this league have coached in the Final Four. So coaching's good, the players are athletic. You know, we got to get, there's part of our deal in recruiting, we got to get more athletic. I mean, if we want to be the fastest team in this league, you can't be on the bottom half of the league in athleticism. That's not going to work. You got to get athletes if you want to play fast. So that's what we've been doing in recruiting. But, I mean, I like the league for how we want to play.
Sure.
You know, most of these teams aren't going to try to slow it down on us. You know, they're thinking they've got athletes to run with us. And, you know, there's a lot of teams in this league that will try to run with us. And hopefully we're better at running game than they are because we work on it more. And that's kind of other leagues, you know, shoot, even in the MAC when we were at Buffalo, I think everybody in that league tried to slow, everybody except Central Michigan would try to slow the ball down on us, and, you know, it didn't work well for them, but, you know, it's not as fun when everybody's trying to slow it down instead of just play the game. So I think here, you know, most of these teams got pretty good athletes where they're just going to play with you. So, you know, I think it'll be a fun league for us to play the style that we want to play in, and we just got to get athletes that can play the way we want to play, and I think we get a good start to that.
Fantastic. Last question, I'll let you go. I know it's kind of hard to speculate. You still have two players testing the draft process, Herb Jones, John Petty. And it's kind of a two-part question. One, I don't know where they're at in the process. I don't even know where the process is at because obviously we still don't have a draft date or a deadline or anything like that. But one, is there any kind of update with those guys? And two, more importantly, just the broader question of year two in Alabama basketball under your watch and your staff's watch. It sounds like you're excited. It sounds like that you're excited about the talent you're both bringing in, some of the guys that you're returning, and obviously, of course, hopefully potentially returning. Just wanted kind of your thoughts going into year two.
Yeah, I think, with Herb and Petty, they're still having interviews, both of them. They've had interviews this week, last week. So, they don't have to bring their name. For me, it would be nice if I knew, the NCAA extended that June 3rd date and didn't give a new date.
Yep.
So I don't know when they'll have to make a final decision. But as long as they're still getting interviews, I mean, it still makes sense to just leave your name in.
Sure.
So, I think, once the interviews dry up and maybe there's no more information that they can get, then they'll hopefully make a decision. But, I think in talks with Herb, it's really likely that Herb will be back. I think, he needs a year where he stays healthy. But I think it's good for him. I think it's good for him to put his name in and just get the feedback and stuff. And Petty's really had a decision to make. I mean, he's, right now he's kind of all over from mid-second to, not drafted, but everybody interested in. And, does he want to try to come back and put himself into the first round? Is there a team that pops up and tells him they'll take him like early second and guarantees him a two-way? There's a lot of that stuff yet to be determined. So I think, I don't know when we're going to know on him, to be honest with you. I'd love to know sooner rather than later because it would certainly help me with recruiting and figuring stuff out. But, I can't – I'm also not going to pressure kids into making decisions rushed and what's not in their best interest. We want to do what's best for the kid all the time. And so right now he's gathering information. I'm talking to NBA teams. He's talking to NBA teams. And we're trying to get as much information as we can and kind of go from there. So Petty's still really, really up in the air and really trying to just figure out which way he's going to go.
Fantastic. Nate Oates, head coach, University of Alabama. Coach, I know how busy you've remained, even in the off season, even not really being able to go very far from the house, but I genuinely appreciate you making some time. It was a lot of fun, and I hope to do it again soon, my friend.
Thanks, Aaron. Appreciate you.